Okay.
Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David. Okay, October 18, 2017, RA 6329, 2021. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Peace River Will. Peace River Hill, shut the sun. Spread the blessed tidings all the world around. Tell the joyful news where heaven man is found. Peace of the world may come. Peace of the world, whosoever will. Send the proclamation over vale and hill. There's a loving father on the wonder home. Peace of every will may come. Peace of every come, need not delay. Now the door is open, anywhere you may. Yeshua is the truth, the only living way. Peace of every will may come. Send the proclamation over Ben Hill. He's a loving father, cause a wonder home. Whosoever health may come, whosoever will, the promise is secure. Whosoever will, forever must endure. Whosoever will, tis life forevermore. Whosoever God may come. Whosoever will, whosoever will. Spread the joyful nation over vale and hill. Tis a loving father, cause a wonder home. Whosoever God may come.
Part 10, Raise Him Up. We're on Town of Greetings, Volume 1. We're on number 35, and we're on page 23. We're going to defer, though, to Hosea chapter 6 and read the whole chapter. Woe unto them that are at ease in Zion and trust in the mountain of Samaria, which are named chief of the nations, unto whom the house of Israel came. Pass ye unto Calneh, and see, and from thence go ye unto Hamath the great, then go down to Gath of the Philistine. Be they better than these kingdoms? Are their border greater than your border? Ye that put far away the evil day, and cause the seed of violence to come near. Okay, let's start all over and do that again. I was in Amos chapter 6. Let's go to Hosea chapter 6, start with verse 1. Come, let us return unto Yahweh, for he hath torn and he will heal us. He hath smitten and he will bind us up. After 2 days will he revive us, and the third day he will raise us up, and we shall live in his sight. Then shall we know if we follow on to know the Yahweh. His going forth is prepared as the morning. And he shall come unto us as the rain, as the latter and the former rain, unto the earth. Ephraim, what shall I do unto thee, O Judah? What shall I do unto thee? For your goodness is as the morning cloud, and as the early dew it goeth away. Therefore have I hewed them by the prophets. I have slain them by the words of my mouth. And thy judgments are as the light that goeth forth. For I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of Yahweh more than burnt offerings. But like men have transgressed the covenant, they there have they dealt treacherously against me. Gilead is a city of them that work iniquity and is polluted with the blood. And as the troops of the robbers wait for a man, so the company of the priests murder in the way by the consent, for they commit lewdness. I have seen a horrible thing in the house of Israel. There is the whoredom of Ephraim. Israel is defiled. Also, O Judah, he has set an harvest for thee when I return the captivity of my people. Okay, when he returns the captivity of his people, that will mean that the 144,000 will then be revealed, brought into view with the house of David. This is Judah, the lawgiver. So it says, also, O Judah, he has set an harvest for thee. See, Judah has a harvest. Israel has a harvest. Judah has a harvest. Because Judah has to produce 12,000 of the 144,000, Judah has to produce 12,000. So there's 12,000 right there harvest just for Judah. Yeah, okay. Okay, that ends our Hosea chapter 6. Let's now go to volume 1, Time to Greetings. We're on number 35, and we're on page 23. And it says, let's do a little review from our study, last study. Isaiah 34:17, and he hath cast the lot for them, and his hand hath divided it unto them by line. They shall possess it forever, from generation to generation shall they dwell therein. Regardless whether we take this verse to say that the wild beast shall possess it forever, or whether we take it to say that those who seek out of the book of the Yahweh shall possess it forever, our greatest concern must be to personally acquaint ourselves with Yahweh and His truth, if we would gain His favor and find His shelter in this time of trouble. Behold, a king shall reign in righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment, and a man shall be as a hiding place from the wind, and a covert from the tempest, as the rivers of water in a dry place, as the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. Isaiah 32:1-2. Now we shall go on into the 35th chapter of Isaiah, who is but a continuation, of which is but a continuation of the 34th. Isaiah 35:1. For the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom in the rose, or as the rose. What a difference! When the Yahweh manifests His power and purifies His church in the lands of the Gentiles, the wilderness, and the land of the heathen, the solitary place, shall both be glad to see Yahweh's holy people. Finally, as Yahweh's truth for this time penetrates throughout the land, where there are no Christians at all, the desert places shall blossom as a rose, so to speak, and thus yield an abundant harvest of souls. Isaiah 35:2-4. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of Yahweh and the excellency of our Elohim. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. Say unto them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your Yahweh will come with vengeance. Even Yahweh with a recompense, He will come and save you. This great commission and opportunity to proclaim Yahweh's soon coming of vengeance are ours. We must not fail to take advantage of these privileges. With the mighty message for this time, we must strengthen the weak. We must make firm the knees that are giving out. Those who are unable to stand up and hold their own must be strengthened. He must reassure the fearful that Yahweh is to come with vengeance against the unbelieving with the recompense for the faithful. Isaiah 35:5-6. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing, for in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams of truth, streams of the truth in the desert. He's got in parentheses, of the truth. And when these things take place, and it will be just as natural for the blind to see, the deaf to hear, the lame to leap, and the dumb to sing, yes, as natural as blossoms are followed with the fruit, Yahweh's truth for this time is to spread everywhere and reap a great harvest of the soul. Also, just the light shining from the cities, from the cities and villages, and from the high places and the low places of the earth, Yahweh's word was obeyed, and as a result, there were memorials for him in every city and village. His truth was proclaimed throughout the world. Testimony, Volume 9, page 28. If but one soul saved from every city and village, there would be several times 144,000 living souls. Isaiah 35:7. And the parched ground, the places which are now entirely devoid of the truth, shall become a pool. And the thirsty land, the land that thirsts for Yahweh's truth, springs of water in the habitation of the dragon, where each lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes. There shall be fruit, as you see, even where the dragon lies. Isaiah 35:8. And a highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those the wayfaring men, those fools shall not err therein. None shall be left in the wilderness, for there shall be a highway for all the followers of Elohim's truth. Matters not what the faithful, the illiterate, or the otherwise, they shall not err therein. Indeed, all the wheat shall be gathered and put into the barn, the kingdom. See tract number 3. The judgment in the harvest, Isaiah 35:9. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up thereon. It shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. Once the hypocrites are taken out, they shall not be allowed to return and to endanger the peace of Yahweh's people. Only the redeemed shall walk on the highway of the holiness. And where does the highway lead? The next verse gives the answer. Isaiah 35:10. And the ransom of Yahweh shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and silence shall flee away. Yes, the highway leads unto Zion with songs and everlasting joy. Shall the redeemed enter therein, never more to sorrow or to sigh. For he cometh to judge the earth. He shall judge the world with righteousness and the people with his truth. Psalm 96:13. Brothers, sisters, the sacrifices we may be called to make are as nothing in comparison to the privilege of heading for Zion via the highway of holiness. Ponder upon this, then act. Let nothing deter you from complying with Yahweh's truth at this time, the day in which the nations see Edom perish and the desert blossom. Act now, while the highway to Zion is in the preparation. We all went under this tree and sat down to look at the glory of the place. And Brother Fish and Stockman, who had preached the gospel of the kingdom, and whom Elohim had laid in the grave to save them, came up unto us and asked us what we had passed through while they were sleeping. We tried to call up our greatest trials, but they looked so small compared with the far more exceeding and eternal way of glory that surrounded us that we could not speak them out, and we all cried out, Hallelujah! Heaven is cheap enough, and we touched our glorious harps and made heaven's arches ring. earlier writings, page 17. Okay, that ends number 35. We're going to go right on end to number 36 of Timeless Readings, volume 1. And the title of that of this study is Comfort Ye My People. The end of your long and trying journey. If not awakened now, they may sleep forever. Text for the prayer. The Nearer Upward Road. I shall read from the Mount of Blessing, 198. It says, the narrow upward road leading unto home and rest furnished Yeshua with an impressive figure of the Christian way. The path which I have set before you, he said, is narrow. The gate is difficult at the entrance, for the golden rule excludes all pride and self-seeking. There is indeed a wider road, but its end is destruction. If you would climb the path of the spiritual life, you must constantly ascend, for it is an upward way. It must go with the few, for the multitude will choose the downward path. In the road to death, the whole race may go with all their worldliness, all their selfishness, all their pride, dishonesty, and moral debasement. There is room for every man's opinion and doctrine, space to follow his inclinations, to do whatever his self-love may dictate. In order to go in the path that leads to destruction, there is no need of searching for the way, for the gate is wide and the way is broad. And the feet naturally turn into the path that ends in death. We should pray for power to enable us to turn aside from the broad path and follow self, the path in which we find ourselves from the birth up. We should pray to choose the narrow path with the few, to know for a certainty that only the narrow upward way leads to home and unto peace. End of the prayer thought. Let's go now into the Comfort Ye My People, or April the 12th, 1947. Last week we finished studying the 35th chapter of the book of Isaiah, and now, since, as can be readily seen, chapter 36 through 39 inclusive interrupt with the historical data the theme of Isaiah's prophecy, we shall continue. For inspiration picks up the thread of thought in chapter 40 with a tender plea to Yahweh's message-bearing people. Isaiah 40, verse 1 and 2. Comfort ye my people, saith Yahweh. Speak ye comfortably unto Jerusalem, and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received of the Yahweh hand double for all her sin. Verse 2 leaves no doubt that inspiration is speaking unto a people in the latter days, the days in which the warfare, pilgrimage, and captivity of Elohim's worthy people are accomplished. Having received double for their sin and rebellion, their iniquity is pardoned and are now soon to be delivered. You cannot afford to overlook the comforting message. You must not neglect to make ready for that is the reason that it is now unsealed and freely delivered unto you. Prepare to meet thy Elohim is its key note. Isaiah 40, verse 3, the voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Yahweh, make straight in the desert a highway for our Elohim. Timely greetings, number 36. True, verse 3 found a fulfillment in the work of John the Baptist. That the verses preceding and also the verses following definitely apply unto the people in the latter days, and only partially unto the people in John's day. Therefore, the truth stands out boldly, that the direct fulfillment of this chapter is found in our time, thus making John's work an ensample of our work. John's work, the type, ours, antitype. The wilderness and the desert, Isaiah 40, verse 3, in contrast, unto the vineyard, the house of the Judah, literally and antitypically says, the voice of him that crieth in the land of the Gentiles that says, prepare ye the way of the Yahweh, make straight in the Gentile world a highway for our Elohim. Isaiah 40 verse 4, every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and high and hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain. To make this highway straight, the voice is, as it were, to raise up the valleys, cut through the mountain and hills, and grind down the rough places. That is, every obstruction must and will be removed. The saints must be gathered regardless where they live. Isaiah 40 verse 5, and the glory of the Yahweh shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. This shall come to pass as soon as the highway is made ready. Isaiah 40 verse 68, the voice said, cry, and he said, what shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all the goodliness thereof is as the flower of the field. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, because the Spirit of the Yahweh bloweth upon it. Surely the people is grass. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, but the word of our Elohim shall stand forever. The voice proclaims that all are grass, that all the goodliness is in man is as the flowers of the field, but the word of Elohim stands forever. It must be then that men are blind unto these realities, else they would not need to be reminded of them. It must be that they are dependent upon flesh instead of on the word of Elohim and his Spirit. Isaiah 40 verse 9-11, O Zion, that bringest good tidings, get thee up into the high mountain, O Jerusalem, that brightest, that bringest good tidings. Lift up thy voice with the strength, lift it up, be not afraid. Say unto the cities of Judah, behold your Elohim, behold, the Yahweh Elohim will come with a strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm, and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. The message which this chapter contains, is, we see, is not a message to be preached unto the world, but to the cities of the antipical Judah. The church and those who proclaim it are citizens of the antipical Zion and Jerusalem, members of the church. They are fearlessly to lift up their voices with the strength. They are to explain that the people whom Elohim uses to get his work done are his arm, that they are to rule for him, that his reward is with him, and his work yet before him, that he shall feed his flock, and with his arm, with his church, he shall gather the lambs, the newly converted, and carry them into his kingdom. Isaiah 40 verse 12-20. Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out head with a span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, and the hills in a balance? Who hath directed the Spirit of Yahweh, or being his counselor, who hath taught him? With whom took he counsel, and who instructed him, and taught him in the path of judgment, and taught him knowledge, and showed unto him the way of the understanding? Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket, and are counted as the small dust of the balance. Behold, he taketh up the isles as a very little thing, and Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor the beasts thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before him are as nothing, and they are counted to him less than nothing, and vanity. Unto him then will ye liken Yahweh, or what likeness will you compare unto him? The workman melteth a graven image, and the goldsmith spreadeth it over with gold, and casteth a silver chain. He that is so impoverished that he hath no oblation chooses a tree that will not rot. He seeketh unto him a cunning workman to prepare a graven image that shall not be moved. Those who are ignorant of Yahweh liken him unto something, but the great question is, unto whom? To what are we liking him? To something, although there is no comparison of him? Isaiah 40, verse 21, 26. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Have it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundation of the earth? It is he that sitteth upon the circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretches out the heavens as a curtain, and spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in, that bringeth the princes to nothing. He maketh the judges of the earth as vanity, yea, they shall not be planted, yea, they shall not be sown, yea, their stock shall not take root in the earth, and he shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither, and the whirlwind shall take them away as stubble. Unto whom then will you liken me, or shall I be equal? Saith the Holy One. Lift up your eyes on high, and behold, who hath created these things, that bringeth out their host by the number? He calleth them all by the names, by the greatness of his might, for that he is strong. Now his power, not one failure. Oh, how great Yahweh our Elohim is, and how slow we are to grasp his promises. How slow we are to let him take full charge of us, just as he has charge of the stars. Isaiah 40, verse 27. Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Yahweh, and my judgment is passed over from my Elohim? Obviously, Elohim's people are mistaken concerning his knowledge of their ways. Isaiah 40, verse 28-31. Hast thou not known, hast thou not heard, that the everlasting Elohim, the Elohim that created the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary, there is no searching of his understanding? He giveth power unto the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall, but they that wait upon the Yahweh shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with their wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. These verses explain that Yahweh's people need to know all these things before they earn the right to walk in his holy kingdom. And what a wonderful privilege is ours if we but wait on the Yahweh. If we but remain true and faithful unto his word, then he shall renew our strength like the eagle. We shall run and not be weary. We shall walk and not faint. As the great and dreadful day of Yahweh is fast approaching, and as we are already told what to do, to make ready, we need not be found wanting. Surely his salvation is nigh them that fear him, that glory may dwell in our land. Truth shall spring out of the earth, and righteousness shall look down from heaven. Yea, the Yahweh shall give that which is good, and our land shall yield her increase. Righteousness shall go before him, and shall sit us in the way of his steps, Psalms 85:9-12. What a comforting message this is. Any wonder why the Almighty urgently commands, comfort ye, my people, the end of your long and trying journey. Okay, that ends number 30. It's time to read volume 1, number 36. We'll just go right on and to number 37. It says, the end of your long and trying journey. This is April the 19th, 1947. April the 19th. That's a favorite date. Illuminati world. April the 19th. Our message this afternoon is found in the 51st chapter of Isaiah, beginning with the first verse. Hearken unto me, ye that follow after righteousness, ye that seek the Yahweh. Look unto the rock whence ye are hewn, and unto the hole of the pit which ye are digged. look unto Abraham your father and unto Sarah that bare you, Isaiah 51, 1 and 2. This is a text of address, like I said, April 19, 1947. Okay, it says, in this chapter, Yahweh is speaking unto the descendants of Abraham. I was 9 years old in 1947. And so if I had read this message back then, if my mother had read it to us, or father, mostly my mother, and my father just, he was just there. He was a good man, but my mother was the spiritual leader of our household. And we were going to the Adventist church there in Odessa, Texas. V.T. Hardiff was down in Waco, Texas, giving these messages. We knew it not. But here he is talking to the Adventist church. V.T. Hardiff was talking to the Adventist church back in 1947. He says, "Hearken unto me, ye that follow after righteousness." Now this message is to the Adventist church. "Hearken unto me, you Adventists. Ye that seek the Yahweh, ye that follow after righteousness, look unto the rock whence you are hewn." So he says, look unto the rock whence you are hewn. When was the Adventist church hewn? It was hewn out in 1844. Out of the rock. And who was that rock? That was Yahshua. He was that rock in the cloud. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4. "And unto the hole of the pit whence you are digged, look unto Abraham your father and unto Sarah that bare you," Isaiah 51, 1 and 2. In this chapter, Yahweh is speaking unto the descendants of Abraham, unto the generation that is following after righteousness. We now need to know, we now need to find in the stream of time the exact generation which inspiration here addresses. Is it the people of Moses' time, of Isaiah's time, of the apostles' time, of our time, or of some other time? If the chapter in is addressed unto us, then our need of studying it and our interest in it will be infinitely greater than it would be otherwise. The information we are seeking is found in verses 17. "Awake, awake, stand up, O Jerusalem, which has drunk at the hand of the Yahweh the cup of his fury. Thou hast drunken the dregs of the cup of the trembling and wrung them out," Isaiah 51:17. This verse reveals that Yahweh is speaking unto a people who have gone through all the trials, hardships, captivity, and persecution, a lot of them, to go through for their sin and disobedience. And they have drunk of the dregs of the cup of the trembling and even wrung them out. At long last there are no more dregs left in the cup. This, of course, should not be said unto the people in the Moses' time, nor in the Isaiah's time, nor even in the apostles' time. It could not be said unto any people at any time, but unto those who have come unto the time of their liberation from the want, fear, and insecurity which they have created through their sin and rebellion. For the divine calling to awake, however, revealed that though the time of the deliverance has come, yet they are in a deep spiritual sleep, ignorant of those good tidings. Thus saith Yahweh, the Elohim, and thy people that pleadeth the cause of his people. Behold, I have taken out of thine hand the cup of trembling, even the dregs of the cup of my fury. Thou shalt no more drink it again. Isaiah 51:22. Yahweh, you see, positively addressed the people who have already taken all the punishment that they are to take. And at long last, he is pleading their cause. This cannot be said at any time unto any people hitherto for. How do we know that the time is here and that Yahweh is now speaking unto us? We know it from the fact that these long concealed prophecies on the subject are now for the first time unfolded and brought unto the attention. We are now ready to study the chapter verse by verse. Isaiah 51, 1 and 2. "Hearken unto me, ye that follow after righteousness. Ye that seek Yahweh, look unto the rock which ye are hewn, and unto the hole of the pit which ye are digged. Look unto Abraham your father, and unto Sarah that bare you. For I called him alone, and blessed him, and increased him. Yahweh advises people of the day to hearken unto him. They are those who are endeavoring to obtain righteousness, those who are seeking the Yahweh, and who are anxious to have a revival reformation among them. They are now urged to look unto the rock which they are hewn, and unto the hole of the pit which they are digged. We are not to conclude that the Jews are the only descendants of the Abraham. Those who are fortunate enough to have this revelation brought unto them are the people. There is no other safe conclusion if Yahweh calls the prophecies to be written, sealed, and then unsealed at his will and at the time appointed. The Jews, therefore, are not the only descendants of Abraham. For the finding these seekers of the righteousness really are, there are several genealogical facts to consider. Number one, only the citizens of the kingdom of the Judah. Only the citizens of the kingdom of the Judah. Now that's your Davidians. That's not the Seventh-day Adventist church per se. Even though the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists certainly are part of the Seventh-day Adventist church. But Judah is only one tribe of the 12. And the Adventist only represents 10 tribes. Let's do it again. Only the citizens of the kingdom of the Judah, the two-tribe kingdom, Judah and Benjamin. Now remember, Benjamin is the youngest son of Jacob. And he is the doorkeeper for Judah. Judah has this location around Bethlehem in the land of Judea, about central Israel. And the headquarters is in Jerusalem, the capital of Jerusalem. All right, it says, the two-tribe kingdom of Judah and Benjamin received the title Jew. Those of the ten-tribe kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, were scattered among the nations, and there they completely lost their identity. Number three, the Christian church herself is an offshoot of the Jewish church and nation. The apostles and her followers, up to about 35 A.D., were all Jews. Then it was not again a multitude of Jews. Then it was that again a multitude of the Jews lost their identity by calling themselves Christians. That's how come they lost their identity. Now, if they'd have called themselves the descendants of the apostolic Nazarene creed of the disciples, they'd have called them the descendants of the disciples and of the descendants of Yahshua and called him by his right name, then they would not have lost their identity. But because they chose to call themselves Christians, that would mean the followers of Christ and not the followers of Yahshua. Now, do you get the point? For the Greeks, the Latin, changing the name of Yahshua, changing the identity of the title of Yahshua, which the Messiah is a title. Christ is a change of the title of the Messiah. And Christ is nothing but a title. And it's a word taken from Christo, a Latin term taken from Christo. And Christo is the name of a sexual rubbing oil. So they really went to the bottom of the barrel to drag up that one. Satan really just went to the bottom and just of the barrel, so to speak, and he drug out that word Christo, transliterated from the Latin, not from the Hebrew, from the Latin, and said, let's just call it Christ. And then let's just, because that's the name of a sexual rubbing oil, how demeaning can you be? And instead of calling him the Messiah, let's call him Christ and change him into a whole new identity. And then let's call his followers Christian. Put the I-A-N on it, meaning followers of Yahshua are coming out of the Christ era. So all those that followed the teaching of the apostles, coming out of the Yahshua apostolic era, they changed their identity to that new label given by the Greeks, the Latin, which became the language for the Catholic Church, pagan Rome. And so now we have the Jews now longing to lose their identity. Now keep in mind, and now keep this in mind also, when it says that then it was again a multitude of the Jews lost their identity by calling themselves Christians. Now who were these Jews that lost their this multitude of Jews that lost their identity? They were the followers of the Pharisees. They weren't the followers of the apostles to begin with. But when they saw that the Pharisees' time was over, after Yahshua resurrected and set up the apostolic kingdom with the disciples, when the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the publicans, and all those sinners before the cross that helped hang Yahshua on the cross, along with those Roman soldiers, with pagan Rome, when they saw that there was no more continuation, that they could continue being called as followers of the Pharisees, and the only act in town now was the apostolic movement. And so what did they do? They said, well, the only act in town is this apostolic movement. When you see the word Jews, it means that the Greek has shortened the word Judah. And they gave it three letters, Jew, and then they put an S on it to include all the Jews that rejected Yahshua. This is an acronym for all of those of the Judean kingdom that rejected Yahshua and hung him on the cross. These are the ones that hung him on the cross. So the Greeks said, well, let's just shorten their identity. Let's call them Jews. In other words, it's like calling the Seventh-day Adventists or them old shepherds' rod, those Davidians. It's a derogatory term. It's a stigma. So the Greeks changed Judean, to Jews, the rejecters of Yahshua, and they said, now these Jews want to lose their identity. It's not popular anymore in the New Testament to be identified as of the Judean tribe, of the tribe of Judah. I know that's a long oration that I made about this word Christian, but this just irritates me to no end to think about how that word came into being, and why it came into being, and what the enemy intended by bringing that word and creating that new word. Because all they had to do was continue on. If the Jews want to continue on their identity and not lose it, all they had to do was say, hey, we're of the Messianic movement. We're of the Messiah's movement, which was Yahshua. That's all they had to say. Okay, that's enough said on that. Okay, let's go ahead and reread that sentence. Then it was that, again, a multitude of Jews lost their identity by calling themselves Christians. Comparatively speaking, only a few Jews from the kingdom of the Judah, there it is, see, a few Jews from the kingdom of Judah have preserved their national title. A few Jews. So now those Jews that are in Jerusalem today, they are the descendants of those few Jews that preserved their national title 2,000 years ago. For the Jews, as the descendants of the early Christian Jews, those that rejected Christ, and the descendants of the 10 tribes down the stream, down through the stream of the time, must have increased unto a great and numerable multitude, for Abraham's seed was to be as the sand. Now this is a misstatement here by V.T. Hallett, because those seed of Abraham that becomes as the sand of the sea are the true seed that continue to be called themselves after the apostles fell away, that continue to call themselves of the Nazarene creed. That's the true seed of Abraham that becomes as numberless as the sand of the sea today, not those that continued to be identified as Christian Jews, because those that have continued on down through the last 2,000 years to be identified as Christian Jews are found in Israel today, and they're found in all nations of the world, and they are called Jews in all nations of the world. And they're not called Judeans, they're not called Hebrew Israelites, they're called Jews. So they preserve their national identity as the descendants of the Pharisees. And that's the reason why they're in all nations scattered. That's why but among these scattered Jews on all nations, you have a remnant there. Also among them. So there, and when the harvest comes, time comes, there's going to be a harvest of the remnant of those Jews and all of the nations of the world. Alright? So it says, for Abraham's seed was to be as the sand of the sea for multitude. Everything is, you're going to also have to deal with what David said in Psalms 87:4, in these last days. We're going to have to deal with that also. It says that, I will make mention of Rahab and Babylon unto them that know me. Behold, Philistia and Tyre with Ethiopia. This man was born there, and of Zion it shall be said, this and that man was born in her. And the highest himself shall establish her. Yahweh shall count when he writeth up the people that this man was born there. So now he's going to gather the remnant of Israel. His people, those that are the true seed of Abraham, from all of not only the Jewish people that are in an all nation. For instance, in France, you have 600,000 Jews. They have their own community. They completely are walled around, you know, so to speak. An invisible wall, but they have their own nation in France. And the Muslims cannot go and intermingle with them. The Arabs cannot intermingle with them. And the Arabs have come into France. France have brought the Arabs into there to persecute the Jews and indirectly, but they don't say that, but that's what they're there for. And they bring these Arabs into the land, and these Arabs, all nations, have allowed these Muslims and Arabs to infiltrate into their land, and people don't realize this. All the Euro Union, all over in Europe, all these nations have allowed these immigrants to come into their land. They're only for one purpose. It's a secret one. It's never publicized. But it's for the reason of persecuting the Jews in their land. That's what happened in World War II when Hitler raised up the extermination camps and started exterminating the Jews. The word is that he exterminated 6 million Jews. Well, if he had exterminated 6 million Jews, there wouldn't have been no Jews in the world today. The truth of the matter is he only exterminated probably around 250,000 or less. But it was enough to shake the Jews up and to get them out of Europe and out of Germany. And a lot of them made their way back to Israel to escape the persecution that was brought in Germany. But about 6 million of them made their way to the United States, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, our president at that time, was the one that enabled that to happen. He's the one that had an underground thing going, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, our president, being a Jew himself, a full-blood Jew, he had a reason for saving his people out of Germany. And because he brought them to New York. He brought them all to Manhattan, New York. And they scattered throughout the whole city of New York. And sweatshops rose up all over New York City. Franklin Delano Roosevelt knew what he was doing. He knew that the Jewish people was the most industrious people on earth. And he knew that if he wanted to make an economy thrive during the Depression years of the 30s, you bring those Jews into this country. You bring them into here. And they will make your economy thrive even during the Depression time. And so Franklin Roosevelt knew what he was doing. And those 6 million Jews, instead of being exterminated by Hitler, they were saved by Franklin Roosevelt. He was brought to this country. Because the census of the Jews all over the world back there in the 40s, when the persecution was going on by Hitler, was about 6 to 7 million, all there was, total, in the whole world. So, if Hitler had exterminated 6 million Jews, if he'd had the power to be able to have done this, he could have gone throughout the whole world and exterminated every last Jew on earth, because that was his intention. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt knew it. And even though Franklin Roosevelt worked with Hitler in setting up World War II, he's a co-author, him and Churchill, is a co-author of setting up World War II. They cooperated with Hitler and the Catholic Church to set up World War II. But even though Franklin Roosevelt did this, he had an ulterior motive for saving his own people. And so Franklin Roosevelt, that's the reason why they let him be president for his whole life. He said, if I can be president, and so the Congress had to waive the law. They had to waive the law for Franklin Roosevelt to be president for more than 2 sessions. And so Congress had to pass a special law to allow that to happen. Because Roosevelt said, I will not take the presidency unless you let me be president for life. He's the only president of the 45 presidents that has had the authority by Congress to serve as long as he lived. And he did that for a reason. He wanted to ensure that he could save the Jewish people, because he knew that there was a plan to exterminate them out of the world. So Franklin Roosevelt was both a good president and he was a bad president. He was bad in one way for those that weren't Jews, but he was good for the Jews, folks. And so I'm going to hold that up because I have done my research on that. And anyway, we're getting close to the end of our time for our study, but I want to go ahead and continue reading now from Town of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 37. It says that for the descendants of the early Christian Jews and the descendants of the 10 tribes down through the stream of the time must have increased unto a great innumerable multitude. For the Abraham seed was to be as the sand of the sea for multitude. It is therefore obvious that the few identified Jews of the day are not the only descendants of the Abrahams, but that many of the Gentiles must be of the Abraham. That's what I'm telling you. I read to you in Isaiah 87 by David, Isaiah 87, 4 through that chapter, about how Yahweh says, I've got one here and one there. Rahab the harlot was one of them that he saved back then. She was a harlot. She was a Gentile. Okay? Since this mixed up situation exists, hardly any one can really say for sure that he is not one of the Abraham's children. Perhaps many of the nations whom the world calls Gentiles are the children of Abraham. We do not know for sure who is who. Yahweh, however, has kept a perfect genealogical record, for he said, I will make mention of Rahab and Babylon unto them that know me. Behold, Philistia and Tyre with Ethiopia, this man was born there. And of Zion it shall be said this and that man was born in her, and the high shall establish her. The Yahweh shall count when he writeth up the people that this man was born there. Selah. Psalms 84, verse 4 to 6. Psalms 87, 4 to 6. Not realizing that I was fixing to read this, I had just was impressed by the Holy Spirit to go and quote it and talk about it there before I even got to this paragraph. And lo and behold, the Holy Spirit is working double time here. Because V.T. Hart had the same thing in mind when he wrote this article. The Holy Spirit impressed him to put that in here. So anyway, it looks like maybe this brings a close of our study this hour. You can contact us at the 11th hour. Call us, number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Take the name of Yahshua with you. Take the name of Yahshua with you. Shall the sorrow and the woe, it will joy and comfort give you. Take it anywhere you go, precious name. Oh, how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven, precious name. Oh, how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. Take the name of Yahshua ever as a seal from every snare. If temptation bound you together, read the holy name in prayer. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. Oh, the precious name of Yahshua, how it thrills our soul with joy. When His loving arms receive us, and His songs at times employ. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. At the name of Yahshua bowing, falling prostrate at His feet, King of kings in heaven will crown Him when our journey is complete. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven. Precious name, oh how sweet, hope of earth and joy of heaven.